Medical Frontiers is an information program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. The information featured on Medical Frontiers is intended solely to further the public's general knowledge of current developments in the field of medicine and should not be relied upon as offering advice, diagnoses, or opinions as to any individual treatment or problem. Nothing should replace the relationship that you maintain with your personal physician.
Well, good evening. Dr. Gerald Pfeiffer here on Medical Frontiers on this chilly, rainy, dark Pittsburgh evening. How are you doing tonight, Rob?
I'm good, sir. It's good to be with you again.
Hey, how about the Steelers yesterday?
That's right. Victory from the hands of defeat.
My wife, when it was 21-17, whatever it was, you know, she said, I can't watch this anymore. I'm going back and I'm going to get ready. We're going to go out to our son's for dinner. I'm going to go out back and change my clothes. And I said, I'll only come back and disturb you if the Steelers win. So, you know, like a minute later, I'm back in the bedroom. I said, Marty, the Steelers, no, they didn't. How could they possibly have won? I said, you know, Antonio Brown caught a touchdown pass, you know. And, Ben, I don't know whether you read in the paper, you know, what he told them when they came out, and they had, what, a minute, 28 seconds or something like that? He said, they gave me too much time. Let's do it.
Especially in Ohio. He always wins in Ohio.
Let's do it. and they did it with 10 seconds to spare.
It was a nice win. Nice win.
Nice win. Okay, tonight on Medical Frontiers, we're talking about carotid artery disease, a very, fairly common problem. We're going to be talking about that, but, you know, we're going to be talking about the symptoms and the therapeutic protocols that patients can have and so on to tackle this disease. And we have none other in our studio. We have one guest this evening, and he's none other than Dr. Carlos Rosales. And Dr. Rosales has been on Medical Frontiers a number of times before. He works at Forbes and also at AGH. And it's just fun having you back here, Dr. Rosales. How you doing?
Doing great, Dr. Pfeiffer. Thank you for having me back.
You bet.
I'm excited to be here.
Okay. And we're glad you're excited, okay, because Rob's excited, I'm excited, we're going to talk about this disease. But before we do, you're a vascular surgeon. You're a surgeon who works on bad blood vessels. They can be bad because they've degenerated, they've gotten worse over time as we age, but also from accidents and so on. Sometimes vascular surgeons are needed to repair vessels that have been torn in accidents and that type of thing. But tell us a little bit about your experience as far as education is concerned. Where'd you go to school? Where'd you take your residency, fellowship, and that type of thing?
Yeah, so that was a lot of moving all over the place. So
okay.
I did college at Baylor University for undergrad, and Waco is where the undergrad is.
In Texas, right?
In Texas, you got it. And then I came here to Pittsburgh for med school. I went to Pitt.
Okay.
So that was my first experience in the great city of Pittsburgh. Subsequently, we moved away for training. I went to the University of Texas Medical Branch for general surgery. And then after that, we went to Cincinnati, to the University of Cincinnati for my vascular fellowship.
Okay.
And once it was all said and done, we came back here to the great city of Pittsburgh, and I've been here ever since.
Okay, great. How many years have you been in practice now?
This is my ninth year in practice, almost 10 now.
Almost a decade.
Yeah, a decade.
Time to take boards again.
Yeah, time to getting some gray hair and trying to take the boards next.
Okay. Okay, when we talk about vascular disease, we talk about the carotid artery. Tell us a little bit about the carotid artery, where it is, what it does.
Yeah, so there's basically two main arteries in the front of your brain and two in the back. So the carotid arteries are in your neck, and they're the main providers of blood flow to your brain. So the reason that they are of interest to us as vascular surgeons is because strokes. I mean, strokes can happen for multiple different reasons, but certainly one of the relatively common reasons is when people build up diseased plaque, like we were talking about. That plaque can break off and embolize and go to your brain and then have a stroke. And so that's the reason that we are concerned with carotid disease and why we deal with it both medically and sometimes surgically.
Okay, we were talking before the show with Rob Pratt. We almost called him Dr. Pratt. He's almost that category right now, but he's done this show for so long. But we were talking about diseases. You know, the sooner you get them, the sooner they're diagnosed, the outcome is better. And especially we were talking about cancer. But what about the carotid artery? Are there some early symptoms that a patient may have before it completely occludes and causes a stroke?
Yeah, well, carotid disease can be tricky from that perspective because the most common symptom that people have as a first symptom is a stroke. Unfortunately, like other diseases, it doesn't really manifest itself prior to a stroke for the most part. So, you know, if you're lucky and your stroke that you have is small and you recover fully, then great. You know, you can have it treated and do well. Unfortunately, some people have a large stroke as their first symptom. So the way to pick it up is by having screening tests in patients that are high risk for carotid disease, people who have risk factors like smoking, diabetes, family history, where we can do a simple ultrasound, just a non-invasive ultrasound of the neck and look at the carotid artery and evaluate it for disease and then appropriately, you know, take action depending on the patient.
And the ultrasound is a pretty sensitive test, is it not?
It is a very good test for carotid disease, absolutely. It's a very sensitive test. Certainly, usually after an ultrasound, there's other tests that we tend to get, but the ultrasound is great, a great screening test because it's relatively inexpensive and it's non-invasive and it's relatively quick. So all those are good things for screening tests.
And the carotid arteries are fairly close to the skin in your neck. You know, that's where you feel for the pulse in your neck. You don't want to push too hard because you don't want to occlude the vessel, right?
Yeah, it's definitely quite superficial, of course. And some other people may be a little deeper, depending on how much girth you have.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so we said that stroke is the main symptom. Symptom, and that certainly can be pretty devastating. But what can be done if there is a patient who has a stroke, or let's say a screening, and they do find that there is some occlusion of the carotid artery? What are the various therapeutic regimens that the patient is offered?
Yeah, so I like to basically think about this in three different ways, which is one, medical management, two, risk modification, and three, surgical management. So you want to modify the risk factors, such as smoking and things like that. You want to then treat them appropriately with certain medicines like antiplatelets and statins. And then finally, if they qualify for surgical intervention, then there's a few different options from that perspective, and that depends on how bad is the blockage and the risk factors for that patient, whether they're good surgical candidates or not.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Well, this is Medical Frontiers. We're going to take a break here shortly. We're talking about carotid artery disease tonight with Dr. Carlos Rosales. So give us a call at 866-391-1020. And that's also how you can text us on the Wright Automotive line. That's 866-391-1020. We can be reached by email, dollarbankinstantaccess at kdkradio.com. Or just give us a call at 866-391-1020. We're talking about carotid artery disease. If you have a diseased carotid artery or if you've had treatment for it, give us a call. Tell us your story. We'll be right back. Okay, Medical Frontiers, we're back here on the air with Dr. Carlos Rosales, and we're talking about carotid artery disease and how it can be diagnosed and how it can be treated. And we would love to hear from you, 866-391-1020. If you have the problem with your carotid artery or if you've had treatment for it, let us know. Some people also develop a brewery, I guess, that you can hear with a stethoscope. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so if you listen to somebody's neck over the carotid artery, sometimes you can pick up what we call a brewery, as you mentioned, which is just the way the blood flow is flowing through an artery. Which, interestingly, a brewery can sometimes be just normal. So it's not necessarily mean there's something wrong with you, but because you can pick up a brewery, sometimes that may indicate that there's narrowing in the artery, and therefore you can order an ultrasound, and it may correlate with the narrowing, it may not.
And sometimes it can be a false brewery. If you hold the stethoscope, the head of the stethoscope, a little too tight against the artery, you're already occluding the blood, and as you it changes in pitch when you do that, and so you have to be careful with your physical exam that you aren't creating a false brewery. It is.
You certainly don't want to be trying to choke your patient with the stethoscope.
there you go. And what about sometimes these carotid arteries can be treated with catheterization, right? Do you also do catheterization?
Absolutely. So there's basically, once you get to, you made the decision that the patient needs an intervention, the question then becomes, what intervention? And there's basically two different interventions. One is to do what we call an endarterectomy, which is to open up the artery and clean out the plaque, completely and then close it back up. And the second way is to place a stent, which there's two ways to do that. Traditionally, it's been done transfemorally, meaning you puncture the femoral artery, which is located in your leg, and you come up and put a stent that way. More recently, one of the cutting-edge techniques that the Allegheny Health Network is providing is what we call a TCAR procedure, which is transcarotid arterial revascularization, which is a different way to do a carotid stent. It's done via a small incision at the base of the neck, and the advantages of doing it this way is kind of marrying the two techniques in the sense that the advantage of endarterectomy over a traditional transfemoral stenting is that there's a significantly lower stroke rate intraoperatively during the procedure. The advantage of the transfemoral stent is that it's a little less invasive, but the stroke rate significantly higher. Well, if you do a TCAR, you actually get the benefits of both, where you still have a very low stroke rate comparable to open surgery, yet it's less invasive than endarterectomy, where you can do it with sedation and local anesthetic.
Yeah.
So it's kind of bringing both techniques. So it's an advantage that now we are offering in certain patients where we feel that's the best treatment for them.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Let's go to the phone lines. And Shirley in New Kensington, your first caller. Good evening, Shirley.
Smiley.
Smiley?
Yeah.
Oh, Smiley. I'm sorry. Okay.
Okay. I'm 74 years old.
Okay.
Okay. Heavy smoker. Former executive. Did business with 7,000 major companies in the world. My wife died very unexpectedly a while back. She had a rare form of cancer. It's St. Margaret's, and between Christmas and New Year's, and they said there was no way. It was, her last wish was to die here at home on the golf course with her dog, Major, okay? And me and the hospice nurses accomplished that in the middle of a damn blizzard, okay? Shortly, maybe a few months later, I was driving somewhere in my, I have a wheelchair van, actually I own two of them, and my hand just fell off of the steering wheel, okay?
Okay.
And I, the dog was home alone, so I came back home, and then later I went to see my doctor. He thought I had a stroke, okay, but I go to chiropractors and masseuses. My nurse, Gretchen, she's actually a nurse practitioner, damn near a doctor. She just left here a minute ago.
Okay. Okay. What? Okay, just did you have a problem with your carotid artery? Yeah, you can, but what is your specific question, Smiley?
Does it sound like I have something wrong with my carotid arteries?
Okay, and your doctor said that you possibly had a stroke. Did they check your carotid arteries?
No.
They did not. Okay, you say you're going to hang up and listen to the radio. Okay, Dr. Rosales, does that sound like he may have something wrong with a carotid artery?
That's certainly a possibility. You know, one of the symptoms of a stroke is very common is to lose strength in one of your extremities, whether it's, right arm and leg or just an arm and a leg. Smiley sounds like he may have risk factors for that at his age. His voice may indicate that he's a smoker based. So I think it's a possibility. I would recommend that you see your family doctor and they could do an ultrasound to look whether you have significant carotid disease. And also there's other imaging that can be done to even look at your brain and see whether, that symptom was something that, caused any damage.
And like you said, Dr. Rosales, the ultrasound, that's non-invasive. It's a very simple test. There's no pain with it or anything. They just put a little wand, a little bit of lubricant on your neck and rub that ultrasound wand on there, and within minutes they can tell whether or not there's a problem with the carotid artery.
Absolutely, yeah, it's a great screening test.
Okay, and what about the incidence of carotid artery disease? Is it a high enough incidence that more people should be screened?
Oh, definitely. I think it's a very common disease when it comes to overall, even in the whole cardiovascular bed, carotid disease is one of the most commonly affected. And definitely screening tests are very important. There's, for that reason, many times there's, drives at certain places where you come in and you have certain risk factors. You can get screening not just for carotid disease, for peripheral arterial disease, all the other things that are associated, with the arterial circulation. So it's definitely a common disease that screening is key for patients because, as I mentioned, most people, over 90% of them, their first symptom is a stroke. So it would be ideal to pick up the problem prior to a stroke so that you can start optimal medical management and optimal risk modification, and then, if necessary, intervene as well.
Okay. You also mentioned that, with stenting, with angioplasty, that type of thing, there is a risk of a stroke and opening up the artery and, cleaning it out or, putting in a stent openly or whatever you do. There's also a risk that a stroke could occur during the surgery. How common is that risk?
Yeah, so there's definitely risk like any other surgery. And so our job, as vascular surgeons is to look at a patient and basically look at risk-benefit ratios. What's the risk of doing nothing and what's the risk of doing something? So for a procedure, if you have a procedure done by a high-volume vascular surgeon, the risk of a stroke for most patients, it's going to be somewhere around 1% to 2% for the procedure.
Okay.
So it's fairly low. Having said that, the risk of doing nothing in a high-risk patient with a high-grade blockage, particularly if that blockage was symptomatic already, is significantly higher than 1% to 2%. So there is obviously things that we take into account, such as other comorbidities of the patient. There are some people who are going to have high-grade carotid blockage that we may not treat surgically at all because of their other risk factors where we feel that we're really not going to benefit them.
Okay, if somebody has a disease in their left carotid artery, what is the percentage, the odds of having a disease in the right carotid artery?
Oh, they're very high. So for the most part, when we do screening tests, it's always a bilateral test.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't do a unilateral. Let's say we're suspicious of one side or the other. Maybe we picked up a Bruit, as you mentioned earlier. A screening ultrasound is always going to check both sides because they tend to go together. Usually
right.
If you have it in one, you're going to have it in the other. It may not be the same degree, but there's going to be some disease usually on both sides.
And somebody who has coronary artery disease or peripheral vascular disease, like disease in the arteries of their legs, the chances of them having some problems with their carotid is much, much higher.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the screening tests for coronary surgery prior to you having a CABG is a carotid ultrasound, because that's something they want to know ahead of time before they go to surgery and do open heart surgery. So they definitely correlate together.
Yeah. Because, like it has been said, if you have one bad artery, you might have more than one bad artery.
Yeah, well, it's the same risk factors, and our whole body is connected. So if you have whatever risk factors are there, they're going to be affecting carotids, your heart, your legs.
And you've mentioned smoking several times.
Yeah, that's right. The big one. Smoking is the big one.
Okay, well, this is Medical Frontiers. We're going to take a break. Next week, we're going to be talking about heart valve disease, another vascular problem. So, tonight it is carotid artery disease. Give us a call at 866-391-1020. We'll be back.
The following program is paid for by the Allegheny Health Network.
Hey, we're back on Medical Frontiers. Dr. Piper here with Dr. Carlos Rosales, and we're talking about carotid artery disease tonight. Give us a call at 866-391-1020. And let's go to October in Butler. Good evening, October. Haven't heard from you for a while.
Well, I've been not feeling so well over the summer. I've been having headaches and neck pains, and it goes down on the left side of my neck, across my forehead, and when I turn my head to my right or my left, it aches, and I'm already on my second round of prednisone, and I'm seeing a physical therapist. Is there any connection between neck pain and carotid artery?
How about that, Dr. Rosales? Any connection?
So the short answer is no. Carotid disease is not something that causes pain. It's going to lead to, as we mentioned, strokes, but it doesn't hurt. It doesn't make you feel bad. There is another disease called carotid dissection that can sometimes be painful. That's more of an acute onset of pain, the kind of pain that would take you to the emergency room, not something that would become chronic. So this sounds like it's like more likely related to musculoskeletal spine problems with our guest.
So it has nothing to do with the heart or anything like that then?
Yeah, it's very unlikely. It's not something that the carotid artery would do.
Are you starting to get any better, October?
I feel a little bit better, and I've been doing some exercises, like he said, drop your head to your chest and then put your right hand on your left cheek and turn to the opposite side.
Right.
So I've been trying to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm on my second round of prednisone.
Yeah. Well, as long as you're getting better, it sounds like you're on the right track.
I feel a little bit better, but it still aches, and
yeah.
I don't have a lot of energy to do things.
Yeah. Well, stick with it. Listen to your therapist and your physicians, and hopefully you'll get a lot better, October, okay? Thanks so much for the call. Okay, let's go to Joe. Joe in Gibsonia, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, Joe, you're on the air. Do you have a question?
Yes, I have a question. After having an ultrasound, how much blockage would merit a procedure?
Well, that's a great, great question. How about that, Dr. Rosales? What in degrees of do you suggest treatment?
Yes, that's a great question, Joe. So basically, we tend to talk about carotid disease and what we call mild, moderate, and severe narrowing. And for the most part, the people that are going to require an intervention are going to be the people that have severe blockage, which is defined as a greater than 70% narrowing. And that's not going to mean that everybody who has 70% narrowing needs surgery, but those are the patients that, for the most part, are going to be looked at for possible intervention, depending on other risk factors.
Okay, does that answer your question, Joe?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much for the call. And I think one of the things we stress here on Medical Frontiers is, you know, have a relationship with your physician, your family physician, your general internist, somebody that sees you at least once a year or once every couple of years if you're younger. But and you know your body better than anybody. That if there's a change, if something you notice a lump, you have a pain that's there for more than a few days or a couple of weeks, you know, get it checked out. Because as we have said so many times, the earlier a disease is diagnosed, the easier it is to treat, and it maybe even be able to prevent. Because if you prevent something, you don't need to treat it. That's a lot better for the patient, it's a lot better for the medical community, and it's not nearly as expensive if you can prevent a disease rather than having to treat it. So, you want to talk to Dr. Rosales about carotid artery disease, give us a call at 866-391-1020. You talked about the dissection of an artery, and that's where the layers of the walls of the artery start to separate, and so you get blood sort of in between a couple of those layers, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And that can be painful, but it also, that's a surgical emergency, is it not?
It can be. For the most part, we can successfully treat, depending on where the dissection is. For example, for a carotid dissection, for the most part, we can treat it successfully with antiplatelet management, blood pressure management.
Okay.
Sometimes surgical intervention is required. Dissection in other parts of the body that we commonly see, such as the aorta, also depends on where it's located. Some of them are surgical emergencies,
right,
and some are also managed medically. But it's important what you mentioned about treating this disease early, because if you can modify your risk factors early on when you have a moderate blockage, you know, we can get you to quit smoking and start you on aspirin and statin therapy and try to sort of reverse some of these problems, then you may live out the rest of your life without ever needing anything further if you can modify things.
Have we scientifically proven, we know that certainly statistically that smokers get certain numbers of diseases, you know, with their blood vessels and their lungs, et cetera, but do we know exactly what happens to a blood vessel because of smoking?
Well, I think it's, I don't know that we know exactly. I think it's still, it's a complicated question, I guess I would say. But then we know that the smoking does damage the actual blood vessel wall. And that's what leads to some of the changes that start to happen. You get inflammation in the blood vessel wall, and that inflammation leads to some of this plaque formation. And plaque that's what gets you in trouble. That's what starts to cause the narrowing of the blood vessel, and that's what can embolize or go to your brain.
Okay. And it seems like the lining of an artery is the intima, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very thin membrane, and it seems to be that is sort of the targeted tissue that chronic smoking can attack, right?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, it can attack it throughout the entire body.
Yeah, and we know also that it's involved with inflammation, you know, because and apparently in smokers there is a higher rate of inflammation in the lining of our blood vessels, and our lining of other parts of the body too, you know, as far as our joints are concerned and so on. So from a standpoint of reducing some of the risk of disease, and you've mentioned smoking a number of times tonight, it seems like it would really be foolish to start smoking as a young person.
Yeah, right? I mean, absolutely. I mean, nothing good's going to come from it, and you know what? You'll save a lot of money if you don't start smoking on top of that.
So. Yeah, especially with the price of cigarettes. Yeah. I think in New York, they're, what, $10 a pack?
Well,
now.
I try to encourage my patients to quit smoking, and what I tell them as a little bonus to themselves is just keep buying the packs of smokes from yourself, put in a little jar, and at the end of the year, you can probably take a very nice trip to the Caribbean, you know, with that kind of money.
Absolutely. Okay, before we take our next break, let's go to Anna Marie in Pittsburgh. Anna Marie, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I'm very interested in what you're having to say, and I have a slight occlusion on one side, which is less than 50% and is being monitored usually on an annual basis. I am not on a statin drug now. It's been suggested that I consider that, and I tend to buckle pharmaceutical drugs if I can. I'm asking you, I guess, what do you think that role that plays in the role of helping with this? And secondly, I also have a small mitral valve prolapse and regurgitation. Is there any connection?
Okay, how about that, Dr. Rosales?
So statins, for the last 10 years, I feel that year after year, there's more and more evidence of the benefit of statins. So I would definitely highly recommend to you that you would be consider starting a statin. You know, what we know about statins, originally they were, or they still are used to treat people's cholesterol. But in my particular case as a vascular surgeon, while I do want your cholesterol to be well controlled, even if you have normal cholesterol, I'm going to start you on a statin, and preferably a high-dose statin, because what it also is able to do is decreases inflammation that we're talking about inside of a plaque. By decreasing inflammation inside of a plaque, you can then stop plaque from rupturing. And you know, when a plaque ruptures, not only does it get bigger, but it also can embolize and lead to a stroke. So I would definitely recommend that you would consider starting a statin. And I talk to your family doctor about that, and go from there.
And as far as alternative, problems with the statin, is there anything that is significant more than just mild muscular pain?
No, so that's the most common one. That's I guess the big one. Then most people, when they're intolerable to statin, which is a very small percentage of patients, the big one is exactly what you mentioned, which is just some myalgias or muscle pain. So other than that, it's a relatively safe profile. There was some concern early on about liver problems, but that hasn't panned out to be a big problem either. I think overall, it's a very good drug and very beneficial with people with arterial disease.
Is there anyone in particular that would treat the carotid more effectively than one?
That's a great question. I think that's a debatable question, but I would tell you that just probably any statin would be beneficial.
Okay.
And also, if one statin is causing muscular pain, you can try another one. And sometimes that's just sort of trial and error, you know, until you find one that can keep your cholesterol under control and you can tolerate and don't have that myalgia. And so, Dr. Rosales, how about a 50% occlusion? Is that one, she's followed and so on, but is that one that, is she sort of destined to have that treated, do you think, in the future or not?
No, not necessarily. I think if you, particularly if you start taking statins and you take a daily aspirin, there's a very good chance you could live out the rest of your life without ever progressing to a point where you need an intervention.
Okay.
That sounds pretty good. Any connection with the mitral valve?
No, the mitral valve and carotid artery would be unrelated as far as the disease is concerned.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Good luck to you, Anna Marie. Thanks so much for the call. We need to take a break. Medical Frontiers, give us a call, 866-391-1020. We'll be back. Okay, we're back at Medical Frontiers talking about carotid artery disease. So give us a call, 866-391-1020. If you've had carotid artery disease, or if you have it, you have questions about the treatment, the diagnosis, Dr. Rosales is here to answer those questions, 866-391-1020. And remember, if you need to make an appointment with a physician, you can get into the Allegheny Health Network by going to AlleghenyHealthNetwork.org. to make an appointment, to get some information, or you can call 412-DOCTOR. So for tonight, however, you can talk to Dr. Rosales by calling 866-391-1020. So what do you see in the future, Dr. Rosales? You've been in practice almost a decade now, long years of training, and I'm sure some of the things you're doing weren't even possible during your years of training. But what do you see out there in the next 10, 15 years?
Well, I think the trend in certainly my field has been to get less and less invasive. And what I see in the next 10 years is for that to continue. Certainly, as you mentioned, what we do today is not what we did 10 years ago, particularly vascular surgery. We are, for the most part, very heavily inclined into minimally invasive procedures now. And I think that trend will continue. I am sure that there's more drugs in the pipeline that will hopefully continue to help our battle with plaque. And obviously, if we can continue to work on education of our patients and minimize their risk factors so that we can minimize their disease.
Okay. Some of the procedures you're doing now, could they be done as an outpatient?
Yeah, a lot of the procedures we do now, not so much for carotid disease because we have to monitor people closely afterwards because of the risk of stroke, and also we have to monitor their blood pressure tightly, so that usually is always an overnight stay minimum.
Okay.
But for a lot of the other things that we do in the arterial circulation, such as in the legs, are things that we do and the same day people go home, where that we can reopen a blockage in the leg and put a stent in, and somebody who was having difficulty walking now can walk well and can go home the same day. And even for aneurysms is another big thing that we do. Those are overnight stays, but you know, it's a big difference. We used to have people in the hospital for 7-10 days. From
are you involved with the TAVR program at AHN?
So the TAVR.
Tell us a little bit about that.
That would be my cardiac colleagues, my cardiology and cardiac surgery colleagues, but they've done a great job with that program at AHN. And I think that the future of cardiac surgery definitely will continue to go that way. I mean, they started with high-risk individuals and now are moving to your non-high-risk patients, and have had great success, and that program continues to grow, and they've done a great job with that.
Yeah. Who would ever thought aortic aneurysm can go home in a day or so?
Yeah. I mean, well, even now they're going home the same day trial. Yeah. In Europe, actually, a lot of patients go home the same day. Now we have trials currently going on in the U.S. for same-day discharge for aneurysm surgery.
And for the abdominal approach, for a big incision and so on, when you get in, how long would a patient be in the hospital with that approach?
Minimum 5 days, typically closer to a week.
Maybe a week.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a question on the Wright Automotive text message line, 866-391-1020. Are the new cholesterol panels that include measurement of particle size of any value?
Oh, gosh, that's a complicated question for sure. I think there is some value, but I don't think we know exactly what value. And one of the things that's changing is trying to figure out more about cholesterol and trying to even figure out more about carotid disease. I think one of the things that you mentioned about what's up and coming is trying to figure out who needs to be treated, because not all high-grade blockages need surgery. The question right now, though, is we don't know which of them need surgery, and things like these panels and better imaging where we're going to look at plaque morphology, what does the plaque look like, what kind of plaque is it that is going to make us or help us make better decisions to where we can look at a high-grade blockage and say this particular patient has a high-grade blockage that's very high risk for stroke and should definitely undergo procedure. And more than you might look at somebody else and say, this plaque does not show any risk for that. And so I think those are some of the things that are going to be very helpful in the future.
And we see patients who have normal good cholesterol and normal bad cholesterol, and yet they can also have carotid artery disease, coronary disease. And some people with very, very high levels may not have any disease. So there seems to be some disconnect between the levels of cholesterol and plaque formation.
Well, I think that speaks to just the complexity of our body, where there's multiple different things that are at work together, and therefore it's going to vary in each particular patient, what they may have certain risk factors, but not others.
And we used to think that women did not develop coronary artery disease and so on prior to menopause. And that's a myth now, because
there's definitely plenty of female patients that I see with carotid disease, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Okay. Next week, as I said, we're going to be talking about heart valve disease, and that's another subject where we're doing some valve repairs and so on through the catheter. It just hardly seems possible when, you know, 20 years ago, if you had a bad valve, it needed to be replaced or repaired with open heart surgery and so on. And now we're doing so many different things, like you say, minimally invasive. And that's where it's going to be. Our hospital stays are continuing to go down. I think the average hospital stay at Allegheny General now is like 2.5 days. And that's all comers. You know, so some people are only in there for a day, you know, or for observation. Okay, Medical Frontiers. As I said, next week we're going to be talking about heart valve disease. Tonight we are talking about carotid artery disease. And before we say goodnight, just a few words of wisdom to our patients. How can they better take care of themselves?
Well, I think a few words of wisdom. I would tell you, have a good relationship with your family doctor. Biggest thing as a vascular surgeon that I would tell you is modify your risk. As we talked earlier, don't smoke, save the money. And there are other diseases such as diabetes, you know, try to control all those diseases, have them managed well, and just a healthy lifestyle overall, balance with exercise and a healthy diet can make a big difference to your long-term and your quality of life as you get older.
Absolutely. And that would be less stress. How about stress certainly has a relationship with our health too.
Absolutely. And I think if you have a well-balanced life and all those other aspects, definitely stress can be less as well. So I think all those things, you know, balance your life.
And no matter what you do, spend some time with your family. Don't let your kids grow up without you, you know, because we only have them for 18 years, you know, and appreciate them while they're with us at home. Okay. Okay. We're going to say goodnight. Wear your seatbelt. Don't smoke. Take care of yourself. If you're overweight, try to lose a few pounds. And we'll be back next week with heart valve disease on the 22nd of October. This is Medical Frontiers saying good health, good night, and we'll be back in a week.
Medical Frontiers is an information program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. The information featured on Medical Frontiers is intended solely to further the public's general knowledge of current developments in the field of medicine and should not be relied upon as offering advice, diagnoses, or opinions as to any individual treatment or problem. Nothing should replace the relationship that you maintain with your personal physician.